Perfect. Okay, so I just turned our record on. So, Madeline, I just really appreciate you joining me today. I'm starting a YouTube series where I want midwives, certified professional midwives, certified nurse midwives, direct entry midwives, traditional midwives, and if I'm missing anybody, let me know. I want midwives to understand business and burnout and things to protect ourselves. You and I are very similar in our mission with Believe in Midwifery and Midwifery Business Consultation, that we want to educate midwives for growth and not be burning out every 5 to 7 years and not
growth and for long lasting. I want midwives' careers to be long lasting
and fulfilling, not feeling.
Yes. Yeah, and not just their careers, but for them to also have fulfilling personal lives too. I think there's just this really big disconnect, and I think that's what got me going and Believe in Midwifery, really, was that I wanted to have both. I wanted to be a midwife and help women, but I also wanted to have a family and, you know, life experiences and that kind of thing. And when I was a student, I felt like that was hard for me to see. I didn't see a lot of other people living both things well. Both things in a fulfilling way. I mean, you know, midwives are great, and the way that they take care of their clients is great, and they help so many women. But just too often it's to the detriment of themselves. And I just don't think that's necessary.
I think women in general, like with women empowerment, we're so good at women empowerment for our clients, but we're terrible for ourselves. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, I think it's just getting that cultural norm that everybody else needs to be taken care of but ourselves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so no, I'm very passionate about midwifery burnout. I had it 2.5 years ago. You know, you look at the positives of everything, where you are now and what it's approached me. I just would love midwives to not go through it and then be like, okay, I'm never doing that again, or change careers because of it. If we can be proactive and get good business structures, get those things in place.
Yeah. And how wonderful, like you said, to not have to get there, because, you know, it's almost inevitable, unfortunately. And so, how great if we could figure out some way to make a change in the culture so that, you know, we could make changes before we reach
prevention. We're all about prevention and mission statements.
Yes. Yeah, and that's what midwives are. I mean, yeah, you know, designing our lives, designing prenatal care, designing pregnancies so that you don't get to those risk factors. And that's the same thing that we can do for burnout.
Yeah. So if you want to go into a summary of Believe in Midwifery, how long ago you started it, what was your original mission and where it's evolved to, I'd love to hear about that.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's been just kind of a little brainchild of mine from before I even started midwifery school. I didn't start midwifery school sooner because I knew how difficult the life of a midwife was just from the little bit of being in the community that I was. And the only reason I was in the community at all is because I was a home birth baby myself. And so it was just something that I was always interested in. But I was kind of waiting to see what else turned out with my life, like if I was going to get married and have my own babies and blah, blah, blah. And of course, I didn't get married and have babies young, which was fine. I had a wonderful young adulthood. And then finally, I got to see a birth for the first time, like a real birth, not a video, not a documentary, not a baby story on TLC. My niece was born and I was there. And it just kind of blew my mind, and I knew how important it was, and then to also feel how important it was, right, kind of just made me say, all right, I'm going to do it. And also I'm lucky in that I kind of grew up in a family, and just my own personality is such that, you know, even though I didn't see a lot of great examples of work-life balance in the home birth midwifery community specifically, which is really kind of my expertise and my experience is in home birth midwifery in the United States. And I didn't see a lot of people practicing self-care and doing a good job of work-life balance, but I am an open box thinker, and I I figured I could figure out a way how to do it for myself, even if that's not what it was. And I knew I wanted to be a midwife. So I was like, I'm going to have to go through the process. And then once I get out there, I'll figure out how to do, you know, both things. So I started midwifery school and ended up doing primaries at a birth center instead of with a home birth midwife, because I was, you know, a single woman and trying to make the most of both kind of like time and money, figure out how to either I was going to, you know, take 3 years of being on call, or I could do it for less, but I would have to borrow money. And but anyway, when I went to the birth center, the deal was that I was going to be there for 18 months and I was supposed to be on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the whole time that I was there, which meant that I couldn't leave or go further than 1 hour away from the birth center that whole time. And, you know, of course I'd have my phone constantly on.
The underlining anxiety. Yep. The what ifs.
Yeah. And just be available. And like I said, even going into it, I knew it was going to be hard for me. And I knew it was going to be hard in general, but within just a couple of weeks, I realized that it was going to be prohibitively hard for me. I mean, I don't think you can actually know what it feels like to be on call until you are actually on call.
Yeah.
On call for something so important.
Yeah,
you know?
I know that the underlining pressure of, you don't want to miss it. What if you go here? What if you go there? What if you don't take two vehicles? What if, like, you just have this, it's like planning a wedding. It's like a once in a lifetime. They'll remember it forever. So you have this pressure of like, oh, what, I'll just miss this one. It's not a big deal. Like, it doesn't work.
Yeah. And, you know, and not just that, but also being, I think there's even like a, well, not really, it's just different. I mean, when you're a student, there's like this layer of like, I can't miss, you know, my numbers and blah, blah, blah. And then when you're a midwife, of course, you're the responsible party. So you're like, I can't miss it because they're counting on me. Yeah. So either way, yeah, just the pressure felt even heavier than I could have imagined. And so I was ready to quit. Mm-hmm. Even though, you know, I feel so strongly about midwifery care. And, you know, I mean, I'm one of those people who believes that the world would be a better place if every baby was born into a room full of love hormones instead of a room full of fear hormones. You know, I mean, I really think that it makes a difference.
Yeah.
But I also felt like it was just going to be so hard. So anyway, I kind of started brainstorming at the time, because there was two other students there and there was two midwives, and the two midwives did take a call at the birth center. But the students didn't. And so I kind of rigged up this new schedule that, because, you know, there is a lot of moving parts. You do want continuity of care. You do want the moms to feel like they know who their care providers are and who's going to be at the birth.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to, you know, take away any of what is so wonderful of midwifery care. But also at the same time, I was, like I said, seeing out in the world a whole bunch of burned out midwives, which I didn't think was good either, not just for the midwives, but for the clients.
Yeah.
And so I figured out a way that each of the students could kind of be, without going into all the details, you know, each client would get assigned two students. And so they would be switching off during the prenatal care, and one of them would always be there at the birth. So she would know.
Yeah, you get that relationship, and you give midwifery model. The comment I always made to the clients was, you don't want Leslie Cornwell care. You want midwifery care.
Exactly.
And there's wonderful midwives within our team. So yeah, that balance of 2 to 3 midwives is like perfect, because you can get vacations. You can go to recitals. You can go to baseball games. Like, you don't put your kids in your personal life second to be a midwife.
Exactly. Yeah. And so the way that it worked was that there would be two midwives and three students, and each birth at the birth center had one midwife and two students there. And so mm-hmm. of the 5 people that they met throughout their care, which oftentimes there was 2 of us in the room for the prenatals anyways, 3 of them would be there. So, and with the schedule that I made, each of the students would have 1 week off every month, a 1 week off call. We would still have to be there to do appointments and stuff like that.
Right.
But, you know, we would have the weekends free to go camping or just sleep or, you know, yeah. whatever it was that you had to do. So I asked the owners of the birth center if I could sort of present this at a meeting, and it was the kind of place that, like, sort of we kind of ran it on our own, you know. It was yeah. sort of
I think so, change is hard in general, let alone for midwives. If you've been, the more seasoned you get, the more you get in a routine, and you're like, oh, these young whippersnappers, they just want to change everything.
And so that's what it was like. They let me make my talk at the meeting, and I gave my spiel about, you know, how it would work, and I had all my schedules lined up and everything, and everyone asked a lot of questions, and they couldn't really find any holes in the system or why it wouldn't be a good thing. But then one of the midwives said, you know, I don't see how it's not going to work, but that's just not what midwifery is.
Yeah. Their mindset of what midwifery is. And that's getting right. past that culture of what we think a midwife should be, let alone what women think.
Exactly. And so I, you know, felt at that point that it was, they were definitely, like you said, you know, here's this young whippersnapper, doesn't know anything, selfish, you know, basically what they were saying is, you know, you just aren't a midwife, Madeline.
I had to tell myself for years, it's self-aware. It's not selfish. It's not, when we get guilted our entire life, I've had to work really hard of me wanting to have a work-life balance and me wanting to have a family and personal hobbies and vacations is not being selfish.
Yeah. And not for, you know, and it's not like I'm the only one. I want it for everyone else too.
Mm-hmm. Make you a better midwife by far when you've got this, you're not doing it 24/7 and you're a better mom, you're a better midwife, you're a better business runner when you've got good sleep and you're able to have a balance of a whole person.
Yeah, I totally agree. And so, you know, I felt at that moment when she said that kind of a renewed, because I told you, I was like, you know, I wanted to quit if it wasn't going to happen. And then when she said that, I was like, you have no idea how much of a midwife I am. You know, you don't know how much I care about women and how much I care about babies and how much I care about families. You know, and so I felt this renewed passion of like, yes, I am cut out for this. Yes, I am a midwife. And yes, also, I, you know, my own personal life and health matters too. So I guess that leads into, I'm giving you a lot of background, but you said—
No, that's fine. No, I think it's good to believe in midwifery and where you're coming from, because that story and that mission comes from the passion and drive for sure.
Yeah. And so that is where it came from, was that I kind of was in the right place at the right time with the right people, because they weren't huge supporters of the idea, but ultimately we voted that we could try it for 3 months, and then it ended up lasting and working out great. So the whole time that I was there, 18
months. So in the end, you got an amazing experiment, and you got, I mean, when people test it, it was awesome. They gave you the opportunities. So.
Right. Yeah. And it was great. And, you know, students finished, and you also know that a lot of students don't finish. I mean, the dropout rates of midwifery apprenticeships is huge. Yeah. And so, it was a success, really. Yeah. And so that kind of, like you said, it was an experiment, and it showed me that there could be another way, and not just that there could be another way, but that there could be a better way. Yeah. And so, I mean, it was still hard, as they are, apprenticeships, you know, but I really felt the whole time like, I have to finish this. You know, even when it gets hard, I need to push through, because I have to be a midwife, because I don't think I will be able to make the same kind of impact and changes that I want to make on the community if I'm not an actual midwife, you know?
Yeah, yeah. The image and the branding just from being in the profession, for sure.
Right. And I would have a little more clout and stuff. And so I finished, and then... when I came home, the name Believe in Midwifery came from, at some point, talking to, there was a teacher, I went to Midwives College of Utah, and one of my business professors, she and I ended up actually working together to submit an abstract to the Midwives Alliance of North America conference, which happened to be in Atlanta, which is where I live. In 2016.
Like it was meant to be.
Mm-hmm. And so I applied for that, you know, as a brand new grad, thinking that there was kind of no way, but I was like, well, you know, I have something to say, so we'll just see what happens. And ended up getting accepted.
Yeah, that speech on your site, I encourage people to go. It's very emotional. It's kind of a longer version of what you just talked about, but it was amazing. So I thank you for recommending that video.
Yeah, good. It's believemidwifery.com is my website. And the talk from this MANA conference is actually up there on the website. And it is kind of, yeah, just an overview. And I think it is really motivating. You know, I get emails all the time from people who see it and they're just like, thank you so much for saying this.
We need to inspire women. I look at it as being a business owner and an entrepreneur, and I do private practice, that we are supporting women. Like I say, when I'm the director, I'm in management, I'm creating these bigger systems, I'm supporting the women that are supporting the women. Like we want to inspire.
Yeah, it's just another way to be a midwife. It's another way to be a midwife for sure. Yeah. And so because I still think that there are a lot of women out there who are being told, sometimes directly, like I was, you know, that's not what midwifery is. Or in other ways, it's just a subtle understanding by looking around at the culture that women start feeling like, you know, they want to be able to take care of their families and, you know, be at their kid's birthday party or something. And they think, well, crap, if I want that, then I actually can't be a midwife. You know, it's a subconscious kind of just understanding. Yeah. And so for people to hear my story and hear that talk specifically, you know, I think it really makes people feel like, just be able to take a deep breath and say, oh, wait, like I actually, maybe I am a midwife, you know?
Well, and I found with just as much demystifying of what a midwife is to the consumers, I've done lots of demystifying to midwives or potential students what a midwife is. There's a full spectrum. Especially in the out-of-hospital community in the Midwest, it's very much solo. You do your thing. You usually get divorced. Your kids sometimes talk to you. You have to plan 9 months in advance and take 6 weeks off for your due date schedule just to get a little bit of a vacation. And it's short lived. I think that's what scares so many people away from midwifery. It scares, it's a lot to ask of one person in any profession.
Right. Yeah. It's not just a lot. I mean, it's too much. And so to answer the question of where I began and then where it has led to. So, I mean, the mm-hmm. beginning was just me saying, just saying, like, being on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for months, sometimes years at a time, is one of the number, well, not one of, I think the number one contributor to burnout. That's
I agree 100%.
That's my feeling. And so saying that was kind of, it still is a little bit, but at the time in 2016, it really felt kind of revolutionary. Like people weren't saying that in public. And now I think even in just a couple of years, there has been a lot more people believing that and understanding that it's true. Yeah. But now they're like, okay, but what the heck do I do from here? Yeah. Because, you know, there still aren't a lot of examples of people being midwives and also taking time off call. Yeah.
It's changing a culture. It's our younger millennial ladies are saying, I want this type of schedule. And it's creating good business plans. It's creating good structure in the numbers and the accounting to make it work. Because you can say all day long, I want six midwives with me and I'm going to be two births and we're going to share a call. Yeah. But do the numbers add up in that business backdrop? You want a successful, I mean, so much stress and burnout is from the financial side, depending if you do insurance or cash. I mean, running a midwifery practice isn't just being on call. It burns you out. It's the business side. I mean, it sounds like CPMs, I'm not as fluent with the educational background. They get a little more business education than nurse midwives do.
I don't know if that's how much you guys get, okay. But I was just going to say that we don't get a lot. I mean, I did.
Okay, we don't either. Yeah. It was all learned hard knocks and after the fact.
Yeah. But it wasn't like, you know, it's not like you get a business degree. Just kind of a, you know, requirement.
It's a science focused. It's a nursing focused. It's definitely, you have to learn after the fact. And like, that's where I stress when I have conversations with midwives, they're like, oh, I don't know if I have the money to invest into this right away. I'm like, it's the complete opposite. You have to invest into your business at the beginning, the education, the getting a good foundation for your midwifery practice. It doesn't matter if you have 4 midwives, 6 midwives, if you don't have a good baseline business foundation, it's not going to last. You're going to get exhausted and you're going to push the limits of what you can do because of the numbers.
Right. So yeah, so that's sort of where I have come now, is that, you know, I think I made the splash that I needed to, of getting people thinking outside of the solo practice model. But now the question has become, you know, even just the emails that I get from people have changed, you know, it used to be like, just, you know, thanking me for saying something different and giving them the, you know, encouragement to keep on going on. But now it's kind of like, okay, so am I supposed to be a partnership or a sole proprietorship and hire
the business
or am I supposed to, you know, and so that's where you came in. And that's where we, you know, sort of connected a couple of months ago, because I am not an expert in that field at all. You know, I am, if I'm an expert in anything, which I don't think I am, it is just, you know, kind of encouraging people to find their own way. Because I do think that there is, even when you're dealing with, you know, business, if you're going to do a sole proprietorship, or if you're going to do an LLC, or if you're going to hire someone, or if you're going to be a partnership, whatever it is, like, I am more focused on the kind of personal feelings and self-awareness and boundaries and communication, and kind of like trying to figure out what of those things is actually going to work for you as an individual person, and like how much
individualized self-care and focusing on them and their mind, body, soul.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't have expertise of knowing a lot about the different kinds of ways to set up a practice and the different kinds of, you know.
And I'm an oddball midwife. Like, I joke, all my family are engineers. And I joked when I joined midwifery, I was like, you can't put an algorithm to birth. So that's what makes it challenging. But I found my unique niche of loving numbers. And I mean, people say, oh my gosh, taxes are awful. And I said, if you learn this game of taxes, you're going to make more money. You're going to have to see less women. You're going to love the passion of midwifery because you're not, a third of your money goes away to taxes, and it doesn't have to. Like, I have found it fascinating how much money and finances and business and tax and legal are games. They're just giant games, and you learn how to play them, and you learn how to, I mean, if we can be more successful midwives purely, like you said, if it's the LLC versus sole proprietor, what's the pros and cons of that? What's the asset risk? What's the tax ramifications? Like, I've learned all that stuff, and it fascinates me because I know it can help women out. It can help midwives.
Mm-hmm. And it can help them, you know, because I'm all about like delegating and, you know, not doing everything yourself and figuring out like what it is that you're good at and what it is that you're not good at and what it is that, you know, you can figure out on your own and what it is that sparks your joy and your interest. You know, you talking about that stuff and saying it's all game with a huge bubbly smile on your face, like, I, you know, no.
You'd be like, give me a drink of margarita while I'm doing that.
But look, like, here you are.
It fascinates me.
As an asset and something for people to use, which ultimately will allow them to have more time to spend on the things that they can do, you know?
Yeah, but I think that's part of that big burnout is sole proprietor versus business ownership. You can still work at your midwifery practice, but if you take a vacation, you get in a car accident, you want to go to a funeral across the country, is your business still going to run while you're gone? Like, that's the big difference. And I don't want women to think, I have to do everything myself. And I did that at the beginning running my business because we're like, oh, we don't have much money. We don't have much capital. Like, you have to do it. And there's only so many hours in the day. When I started working 100 hours a week, my husband's doing the backdrop stuff all the time. Our kids were being babysat by a television. I'm like, this isn't right. This is, I did not want to be self-employed. I want to run a successful business and be able to serve women, because you're going to be able to serve more women. You're going to be able to do a better job. It's amazing to me what I've learned the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was super excited to connect with you because I think, you know, that's a lot of what people need right now is
answers. Well, and I think with COVID-19 and the pandemic, if we're trying to look at the positives of everything, what can we control? What can't we control? I think this is a massive opportunity for midwives to get back to the basics and figure out your state regulations, figure out, okay, you're working for a hospital, you may not have the proper equipment, or you're a CPM and you're getting tired and exhausted. Let's go back to the basics, because you can only take so many women. You can only take so many late transfers. Like, you have to take care of yourself. Like, you can't run your wick at both ends.
No. And if you how much better are some people possibly doing when they have a really good, you know, solid business model in place, you know, instead of that they can just fit these new late transfers into, instead of, you know, running around trying to figure out how to make it all happen. And they do, because they've, you know, been doing that their whole life or whatever, just making it all work.
Yeah.
But again, you know, it's to the detriment of themselves. And if it was a streamlined scenario, it would be.
Well, it's amazing how your mind, just like you practice midwifery, the more business I do. So I'm part of the AABC blogs. And when they're talking about all the protective equipment they need to buy and all this extra overhead costs, small private practices get killed with all these pandemics and unexpected things. And all that's going through my head is, how much reserve do they have? How long can they do this? When does FEMA actually going to reimburse them if they do? Like, how are birth centers going to, home birth practices going to survive financially this pandemic? How prepared were they to something like this? And having an unexpected cost. I mean, it's going to take longer for insurance processing. It's that cost is through the roof for those protective equipment. And it's a business. Like, we can give love and heart all day long, but the numbers have to add up.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, it's a crazy time out there for a lot of people.
But nope, I've seen a huge shift in just people. Home birth demands have gone through the roof, and the midwifery practices, people wanting to have options and choices, even students, like, okay, this is the time. My calling is pushing towards it. And I think we're going to have a huge shift in the mentality state of burnout in business for midwifery. I truly believe it, because if we can, just like we take school and we train to be a midwife, if you're going to be a business owner, you've got to train and you've got to be proactive ahead of time.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you. I definitely feel like there has been, a major shift for sure. I mean, just like I said, in the past couple of years, like the difference in reaction to my, cause I actually just spoke at the MANA conference this past year too. So it was just 3 years later, and the difference in kind of, the reaction to my, my talk was a pretty big difference. That people were,
because it has awareness now. It has recognition, and it's not this hush hush thing under the table that everybody just fights through.
yeah. So it's awesome. I mean, so the opportunity is huge right now, and like you said, the demand is bigger. So like the opportunity for having a successful home birth midwifery practice is really, you know, now is a really good time.
So if I had to give you three things to list off the top of your head as like suggestions for burnout, like things that are tips that they could start today, somebody's starting to feel you've got these signs happening of burnout, you're not at the tail end of going off the deep end yet, what would you tell them?
Oh, goodness. You know, three things.
Or even just whatever comes to your mind. Like, I'm thinking in my head is getting a partner. If you do it solo, make sure you have a good collaboration with another private practice. I think that's like a big thing is figuring out the team structure.
Obviously, you need to have somebody that you can, call on when you need them. The other thing that I say actually oftentimes to students specifically, but that would be for midwives right now during this period, or if they are on the edge of burnout, even when all this is over, is saying no to responsibilities outside of midwifery. The work that we do, and being, if you are a solo practice midwife, even if you're not, the work that we do is so important. And if you have to say no to other things that add any additional stress to your plate if you're feeling like burnout. I mean, you do not have to bring snack to your kid's soccer game. You do not have to.
Or picking it up instead of making it scratch. Don't feel guilty because you picked up store-bought cookies.
Like, yeah, definitely.
Those little things.
But also, don't sign up. Like, it's totally okay to not be the class mom this year. And so I think, you know, or even saying no to invitations of things that you don't want to go to. Mm-hmm. There's something really important that we all have, which is an internal compass. And it takes training to really listen to, but when you are given an opportunity, you know, that is somebody says, hey, do you want to join my book club? Or, hey, do you want to come for dinner? Or, hey, can you pick up my kid from school this afternoon? I have a meeting or something. Your body will tell you, like, if that's something that you want to do or not want to do. And I don't mean want as in, like, you know, sometimes you don't want to pick up the kid from soccer practice or whatever for your neighbor.
But you've got somebody stirring and that underlining guilt kicks in of, I to say no does not mean you're a bad person, and don't let that guilt, you're not super women.
No, absolutely not. And, but sometimes, so the internal compass just, it's here and it only has two answers, yes and no. And the way that it makes that decision is like, if you're going to be able to live with that decision going forward, like, is this something that you're going to regret or something that you're not going to regret? Yeah. And so I would also encourage people to start listening to that, you know, don't answer somebody right away. If you get a text message or a phone call, say, you know, and they ask you to do something, say, can I call you back, and sit with it for 5 minutes.
Well, I laugh when you're talking about being instinctual. We're so good with our women and being instinctual during labor. Let's be instinctual outside of the pregnancy and birth process for ourselves. Like, our instincts work on all levels of being women.
Absolutely. But like I said, it takes practice and it takes paying attention to it. And so you need to give yourself a little bit of time to do that. And so I think,
I found meditation has really helped me find my internal compass, because each personality is different. And if a brain like mine is going 90 miles an hour, to turn it down so you can have the other parts of your body talking to you.
So I don't feel like I answered that question super well, but.
No, I think you did great. I think just self-care, like the basics, we teach our women all the time, drink lots of water, exercise, do some self-care things every day. It seems so simple, but it's a habit changing. It's being proactive and stressing. If you take care of yourself better, you're going to do all these other things better.
So. Yeah, absolutely. But I do think, I will say, I think that, you know, saying no to responsibilities that are not, you know, necessary things is a really big one. You know, just for periods of time in your life, like if you are getting on the verge of burnout, if you are a solo practice midwife, if you are a student, you know, doing primaries and also have a family at home, like, you know, this is not the time to be the super mom or the super neighbor or the super whatever.
No. I think that's great advice. So to kind of end our conclusion, is there anything else that you think would be helpful for midwives, advice, resources on your website to send them to?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you are a great resource.
Thank you.
And I think my website is a great resource. I have a course called The Guide to Sustainable Midwifery. And like I said, mine is definitely more focused on sort of finding yourself again, getting back to your instincts and your own personal wants and needs and desires, and not just wants and needs and desires, but values. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what kind of practice you want to create that is going mm-hmm. to be fulfilling for you as an individual person. Mm-hmm. And then I do have some business templates and things in there, but to really get down to the nitty gritty, I think they need to call Midwifery Business Consultation. Because I'm not going to be able to help you a ton with that, but I think there are so many people, midwives specifically, who are disconnected from themselves because they have been giving so much to other women. And so, mm-hmm. I think it's really important to do both things. I think it's really important to reconnect with yourself, figure out why you are doing this, you know, what it does for you.
The best book I found is called The Emotional Fingerprint, and it really gets you to understand your internal drives. What if somebody, if you're getting into a fight or an argument, it may not be the thing in front of you. They're actually, like, when I learned myself, like we talk about this personal development, when I learned myself and what, why I wasn't liking, like, I love midwifery, but why was this style of midwifery driving me crazy? And figuring out my structure, my personality type, and what about my kids, and like all these things, it just helped me better. Like, okay, I'm getting into that level where it's violating my internal me. Yes. And yes. Now I need to step back and refocus it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, and again, like I said, it just, all of that stuff takes practice. And the more that you practice it, the easier it gets. And then you don't need 5 minutes, you know, when somebody asks you to do something, your body just will tell you, like, yes or no.
It's a habit.
Yeah, it's a habit, and it's a learned skill. And I won't even say it's a learned skill. I think it's something that we all have, but it's something that we've all lost.
We got to renew that internal instinct that we've not been listening to for a long time. Yeah, I agree. So, well, thank you so much, Madeline. I am very excited about our talk, and we'll definitely have to do another one in like a month, month and a half. And well, maybe after the baby comes, because congratulations, you're 33 weeks right now. So did you ever tell me what you were having?
I don't know. It's a surprise.
That's so exciting. So yeah, so we'll have to do it when you've got your brand new baby and you're feeling great, and we'll create a good work-life balance for you.
Yes, sounds good. Thank you very much. Great talking to you again.
Okay, thank you.